Welcome to another episode of Two Uglies and a Mic.
For fuck's sake.
Just kidding. Well, welcome back to another episode of Fandemonium, hosted by me, Jackie Colgraff, and Verity Harris.
I waved.
She waved. This is an audio production here, but she's waving.
Sorry.
Last episode was the season two premiere. We discussed in great detail the prices that fans pay, or mostly paid, in 2023, with a big focus on the Eras Tour and Taylor Swift. And during that episode, we touched a little bit on artist merchandise, but this episode, we're really going to take a deep dive into what that looks like today. And this is inspired by the fact that we saw on Twitter that UMG gave full refunds to Taylor Swift fans who ordered merch from the Taylor Swift Holiday Collection, and they didn't arrive on time for Christmas.
And actually, can we just rewind slightly? I was about to put on a sweater on the top of my pile because, you know, always planning in advance, never just take the stuff from the top of the pile. And it was the pleasing sweater. And I was like, oh, no. I can't wear that for this episode.
To be quite honest with you, I was in my closet and I also looked at the pleasing sweater and considered putting that on. And I was like, two fucking idiots, A, wearing the same thing, and B, wearing the thing that they complained about in episode one, because the pleasing sweater was $95 a piece, I believe.
That would have been iconic behavior. I actually think we would have gone viral from it.
We bought it like the very first time it was released. I think it was like the hot item.
Do you know what? I'm getting so many like TikTok, this is what I got for Christmas this year. And I'm actually not seeing any artist merch. I'm not seeing like the pleasing bags that people were like queuing up around the block for. I'm not seeing any like Taylor merchandise, probably because it didn't arrive in time. All I'm seeing is air wraps and socks.
Drunk elephant skincare and Stanley cups.
Yes. That was a thing that even my nan said. She was like, why are your like 14-year-old cousins so into skincare? What's wrong with a bar of soap and water?
Nan's right, because we've all been hoodwinked into thinking that the more we spend on skincare, the better it will perform, especially when it comes to celebrity beauty brands that we really don't need. And they aren't based on science. They're just based on brand recognition. So yeah, don't buy Rode or Skins or Pleasing.
Don't get us started on that again.
Yeah, expect it to be top tier skincare because it's not.
Yeah. I don't understand it. Anyway, we've sidetracked.
Yeah, so a lot of the Taylor Swift holiday merch that people ordered well in advance of Christmas that was, I believe, mostly guaranteed to ship like mid-December. Not only did it not arrive by Christmas, but I still don't think it's shipped. And so they put out a notice that said, as the only company currently responsible for the timely delivery of Taylor Swift merchandise, it is our sole responsibility to deliver holiday merchandise on time. Due to the combination of massive, unprecedented consumer demand, along with warehouse and shipping issues, not all items have been shipped. This is unacceptable, and we are truly sorry. We'll be issuing a full refund on all items in your order that were listed to ship by December 15th and did not arrive by Christmas, and we will ship those items to you free of charge. And so I saw people who had ordered, like, I mean, it blows my mind because I don't know who has this kind of disposable income to spend on artist merch, but they had ordered like $1,000 worth.
This is fucking crazy. Like, I'm just looking on the website now, right? I've typed in holiday collection, Taylor Swift. First thing is a hoodie, 70 quid, which is just a white hoodie with like a picture of her on the back. Then there's a black hoodie, Reputation one, for 85 quid. And then there's a denim jacket for 139. And then there's a random, like, t-shirt seem to be about 30, 35 pounds. Then there's one random t-shirt called the Meet Me at Midnight Colour Block t-shirt for 49 pounds.
Jesus. Well, you can see, I guess it wouldn't be that hard to spend $1,000 then. And there was also, like, a lot of those, like, ornaments, and you kind of didn't really just want to buy one. You wanted to buy them all.
Snow globes as well. I saw people going crazy over the snow globes.
That's kind of cute. But yeah, so people were getting not only all of their money back, but the promise that when these items did ship, they wouldn't be charged. So huge refunds and still getting all of this merch, which, I mean, that has to be a huge financial hit for UMG. Like, I can't imagine how much merch they sold with the holiday collection that then they had to refund. But I don't know if people, like, I saw somebody talking about how they had to reach out to the customer, you know, service representatives at UMG to initiate this. So I don't know if they're actually just giving these refunds out to everybody or they're waiting until you, you know, file a claim.
Yeah. I mean, there's such a markup on these products that, yeah, they're going to take a hit, but
yeah,
£49 for a t-shirt that cost them 50p to print. No, thank you.
I know. And like, obviously they didn't print these t-shirts or make any of this merch in time for the holidays, which is just like, did you not know they were coming? Is December like news to you?
It's like the same thing when you're at a job each year and you do something in digital and it's like, so guys, what are we going to do for Christmas? And it's like, oh, I forgot that was in December.
Yeah, but it's usually, I mean, it's usually June when you start thinking about Christmas plans for marketing. I mean, it's it just shouldn't be like if you knew by whenever they put these items up on the site, which was probably like, I don't know, mid to late November, that you, if you knew that you didn't have them in stock yet, the chances of you getting them in stock and being able to ship them out by Christmas were really slim. Might have been a good idea to pull the plug a little bit earlier. I don't know.
But why would you do that, Jackie? Why would you do that when you can get all that money in pre-orders? Girl needs some money.
And they use the exact same excuse as Ticketmaster, like, due to the combination of massive, unprecedented consumer demand.
I don't fucking get this. I do not get this. It's like, oh, do you remember, did we talk about this last time when it was like a shitload of people trying to buy stuff and probably people using bots as well to try and get this stuff? So our whole website has collapsed, so you can't buy anything. Like, who works for you?
No, stop acting like it's a surprise. She is the biggest artist in the world right now. Like, of course there was going to be massive demand. It's not a surprise and you should be completely prepared for it. Like, you're not like a little mom and pop organization.
It baffles me. Honestly, if I could, I would pay to sit down with these people and ask them what is going through their brains. Like, do they want money or not?
Well, like, I was also thinking, you know, all of these like TikTok shop and Etsy shops and fan-made merch, like, they're able to, you know, I mean, obviously the quantities aren't the same, but like, they can turn it around by Christmas. Like, it's like, you know, some girl in her basement or like someone using a drop shipper or whatever, but like, they're getting them out and they're taking that money right away from Universal because they got it on time. And even though it's like at a much smaller scale, that's just really all it takes. That's the bare minimum. Get the order, get it out the door, get it there by Christmas. Nothing unprecedented about it.
If you can't get presents out at that time and that's your business model, there's a serious issue.
Yeah, and so I was doing research because it's interesting that, you know, Universal handles all of Taylor's merch and all of her customer service around that merch. And it comes through this company that Universal owns called Bravado, who describes themselves as the only global 360-degree full-service merchandise company that develops and markets high-quality licensed merchandise to a worldwide audience. The company works closely with new and established entertainment clients, creating innovative products carefully tailored to each artist or brand. Product is sold on live tours, via selected retail outlets, and through web-based stores. Bravado also licenses rights to an extensive network of third-party licensees around the world. Their offices, blah, blah, blah. Under the Universal Music Group umbrella, Bravado is able to leverage a global sales and distribution network from the world's largest record company, as well as the group's significant marketing strength. So they are quite a large organization with kind of like all the advantages in the world, and they really should be able to handle this better. On their homepage, they list The Weeknd, Ariana Grande, Greta Van Fleet, and Bob Marley as their featured clients, but they have like hundreds more, including Taylor Swift. Like, you can scroll through the whole website and it's just enormous. And they, another quote that's on their website is, "We understand the power of smart merchandising and we know how to create products that spark organic emotional connections between fans and artists." And it got me thinking that besides this fulfillment and shipping issue, they also, I mean, I just think they make the shittiest merch. Like, the designs are so elementary and just like not what fans are looking for, but because they have exclusivity, mm-hmm. they can do that and get away with it and just kind of like mail it in and not really try. And the merch that fans make is so much more thoughtful and so much more targeted to actual other fans. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like companies like Bravado, like never, either they never look at that or they just genuinely don't have to care because, again, they have that exclusivity.
I think it's a little bit of both. So I'm just taking like points from, by the way, I once had an interview for Bravado for an intern job, but I didn't get it. And that was a long time ago. I don't think they were part of Universal back then. I think they were like a independent merch company that like all of the majors used. But anyway,
that makes sense.
I think like thinking about working for a major record label, it's the same. Like when we do a campaign, we'll speak to the merch department and be like, what can we offer as part of this like album campaign? And they'll come back with like the blandest sort of designs of t-shirts where it could be like an album cover, but their designer has like inverted the colors on it and then whacked it on a t-shirt. And it's like, this is the least imaginative thing you could do. And then at the end of the campaign, it will be like, we haven't sold enough of this. What can we do to shift all of this stock that is now stuck in a warehouse somewhere costing us money? And it's like, well, if you actually thought about what people wanted before creating all of this stuff, then we then wouldn't be losing money by paying to keep it somewhere.
Well, again, it's like fans have the power to demand better merch designs by not buying this stuff. And I'm glad to hear that you have seen it not be successful, because I feel like in Taylor's case, it's just always successful no matter yep. what they do, which is super frustrating. And I mean, sometimes it goes on sale, like once in a while she'll have like mm-hmm. markdowns, but it's usually like, I don't know, it's like leftover like odd sizes, or it doesn't seem like it's stuff that like didn't sell because it wasn't cool.
I think Taylor is like an exceptional case as well. We bought Reputation t-shirts for, I'm assuming it was $13. And now,
actually, if you recall, when we ordered those Reputation shirts in the sale, they were sweatshirts, and they told us
yes.
way after we ordered them in the sale that they didn't actually have any. And then they sent us mm-hmm. an ugly one. And then we were like stuck with the ugly one. And that was infuriating.
Yeah. It's just another example of it. Why did we end up with these weird cat pin badges as well?
Yes, I think they threw in cat pins to like sweeten the deal.
Because everybody wants a Meredith pin in their life.
Yeah, I mean, like, thanks. But it didn't really make up for the fact that we did not get what we had originally ordered.
Yeah.
And with things like not arriving on time, I was also thinking about how in the olden days, pre-streaming, if you ordered a physical album,
yeah,
a CD, that wasn't that long ago, and it didn't come the day that that album dropped, you really, except mm-hmm. for the radio, didn't have like another way to listen to it. So like you were shit out of luck until it showed up in the mail. And so now, because I like when I pre-order vinyl for any record release, it almost never comes the mm-hmm. day it was released, even if they did, you know, ship it in advance. And I'm sure that's because they're trying to, you know, protect it from leaking early, but you get it days later, but you stream it in the meantime. So at least like you're part of yeah. the excitement of the release and can, you know, join the kind of conversation and not be totally left in the dark. But I still think it shouldn't count on the charts. I was trying to get clarity around this, but obviously first week sales are really important and that factors in pre-orders. But if you don't get the album that you pre-ordered until after the first week or well after mm-hmm. the first week, like, I don't think that should count. Like, they didn't fulfill your order and they have no reason to, because all they wanted mm. was your money to count as a sale.
So So that's a term that they use at record labels. So it would be, how many pre-orders do we have? Oh, we have 20,000. And then you'd say, how many of these have shipped? So it would be like, how many of these have been sent from retailers, from the warehouse to retailers to then sell?
But that's how many they're sending to like a record shop to sell, or like directly to
fans
who order
them? It's how many they're sending to record shops, but it's all based on the pre-orders that they have had through, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm just not sure Like if I ordered Midnights directly through Taylor Swift's merch shop and they didn't ship it to me on time,
it would still be counted week one.
Yes. I did tweet at the Billboard's, like, the Billboard chart manager guy, but he didn't answer me. And I was like, really trying to get clarity around this because I think, you know, they adjust what they count on the charts and how they count it every so often. And, like, I really think that this is something that needs to be taken into consideration because if you're just going to count it when money exchanges hands, there's no incentive for these retailers or record labels, whoever it is, to fulfill your order in a timely fashion. And that's not fair to the fans.
Agreed. There needs to be changes. I don't know how it works in the States, but I know they changed some chart rules recently in the UK. So it's like after a song has been in the charts for so long, it doesn't count. Like a stream doesn't count for as many, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Like you mean like over time, it kind of like loses its.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why they released the remixes and stuff. So I don't know if that's the same there.
That rings a bell because I know that is why they do a lot of like remixes, radio mixes, guest mixes, whatever. And they also changed in May of 2023, they changed their rules around bundles because they had taken out bundles for a while because they felt like they were, again, duping fans. Like you order a t-shirt and you're like, oh, like a CD I didn't even know I ordered or wanted just showed up in the mail with it. And they were counting that as a sale. And so they took that away from, you know, counting toward the charts. But in May, they said the new combinations of merch and albums dubbed fan packs will allow fans to support their favorite artists on the charts in a way that research suggests that many would like to. However, the packs will be restricted to just two options per album release, a sweatshirt with an LP and a t-shirt with a CD, for example, with the requirement that each individual item must also be sold separately in the same web store. Fan packs will include only merch, not tickets, meet and greet opportunities, virtual items, or non-tangible benefits, and they must also contain a physical copy of an album. Combinations of digital downloads and merch will not count towards the charts. In addition, fan pack offerings must be approved in advance of their on-sale date by Luminate and Billboard. And I think, like, that kind of stuff is important in protecting fans from like buying things that they didn't agree to buy. Like how many times did you used to buy tickets to concerts too? And it would come with an album and you didn't even like that's somehow in the price of your ticket. You didn't even want it. You probably already own it. And then there was like a weird thing where they weren't for a while. They weren't counting it unless you actually went through with the download too. And so there was a lot of like, you'd get a lot of emails after the fact being like, you bought tickets and you actually got this free album and like, you really need to download it. You're like, I already fucking have it.
Do you remember that time where you got like 5 or 6 copies? I'm sure it was a Harry Styles album. I can't remember, but you were like, another one just turned up at my door.
Yes. Yes. I think it might've been his first solo album. I don't know. Every time.
I think so. Yeah.
Oh my God. Every time I felt like I went on the internet, somehow I had acquired another copy. I ended up with so many. I'm like, cool. I don't have a CD player in my computer. I don't have a CD player in my car. I don't have like a boombox anymore. The fuck am I going to do with these?
Harry Styles CDs for everyone this Christmas. Line up.
You can use them as frisbees. You can line your walls with them. Like they're super fun. But again, it's like, stop sticking these things that I didn't want in my order. Yeah. So like, I'm glad that Billboard adjusts their rules every so often to kind of compensate for these sneaky things that labels are doing to increase their sales. But the one thing that is still happening so much and that we talked about in the last episode, because I fall victim to this, it's variants.
Yes.
Not COVID variants.
There's a lot of them.
Vinyl variants.
Listen, I am a fucking sucker for this because...
Yeah. Even CD variants now exist.
I like collecting records and... Like Taylor Swift is my favorite artist. So I know that there's going to be records that I'm never going to be able to get from her. But I'm just hoping that once the Eras Tour and the hype like dies down, maybe in 10 years time, I can pick them up for a reasonable price. But I bought all of the variants of 1989. All of them.
Woof. How many was that?
5? Ooh. 5, I think.
When I was researching for this, I found a Billboard article that said in its first week, 1989 Taylor's versions 1.359 million in traditional album sales, a metric that encompasses physical sales, vinyl, CD, cassette, and digital downloads, quickly surpassed 2023's previous bestseller, Swift's own Midnights, which dropped in October 2022 and had racked up 791,000 in sales so far this year. Swift also has the third most sold album of the year with Speak Now, Taylor's version, which has racked up sales of 755,000 since its July release. All three got to those numbers due to Swift's strategy of offering multiple collectible physical formats. In the case of 1989 Taylor's version, that includes, as you said, 5 color vinyl variants, but also 8 CD editions and 2 cassette editions, not to mention 2 digital download editions, standard and deluxe. Mm-hmm. And when you fall victim to these marketing tactics and collectability and fun colors, you end up really contributing to her, you know, meteoric rise to the top of the charts, mm-hmm. because you did not buy one album, you bought 5 or 8 or 12 or whatever.
It's almost like you get a case of FOMO and fear of missing out, because then it's like, okay, I've bought my favorite color that I wanted. I've bought the pink one, and then everything sells out. And then in a couple of weeks, you're like, oh, great, everyone's reselling them for 150 quid each one. I should have just bought it when it was 25.
Yeah. So do you feel like the resale value that you see gives you FOMO, or are you wishing you could have like turned a profit on it?
No, I'm not wishing I could have turned a profit. I'm just thinking I've fallen victim to it before, where I didn't buy all of the variants and then I look at the resale and I'm like, I am not paying that amount of money for that record.
Right. So you can't complete your collection. You miss the chance to do it.
I missed the chance. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. Because like when she did the clock for Midnights, like I thought that was kind of cool to like make a physical kind of finished product by buying all of them. Like that was kind of neat. But then it was like, I think it should have been, congratulations, you bought all 4. Here's a free clock mechanism, for lack of a better word. Not complete your collection with the addition of this clock mechanism for, you know, $30 or whatever the fuck it was. Probably is a lot more than that. Like, that to me, I think, would have been good incentive to finish the collection.
I actually also think with things like Taylor, where, you know, there is an unprecedented demand, like, just print more, press more. Look, I don't want to talk about it because it's a sore subject, but the Lover heart-shaped, Lover Live from Paris heart-shaped record. Just print more, press more. Like, you know you're going to sell through them. Why are you making such limited quantity stuff? Like, unless it's linked to something like a record store day, which you're giving to independent record stores to help that side of the industry, you're not. This was via your store. You could easily just do more.
But it's like a funny kind of line to straddle, because it's like you want things to seem limited because that, you know, ups the appeal and the like, oh, I gotta have it factor. If they do have like unlimited quantities or just much larger quantities, it doesn't really have that special factor anymore.
We don't know what's the lie anymore, Jackie, because we're told these things are limited quantity to pre-order now, buy now, pre-order now, and then they're only live for 2 days or 2 weeks or whatever. It was 2 days, not 2 weeks, 2 days, and then when it's release week, oh, surprise, surprise, we've got more stock of this limited run on the website. Like,
yeah. Oh, I hate that. Oh, yeah. I hate that so much.
Yeah, fuck off.
I'm like, you lied to me. What I bought originally is not actually limited. It's not actually special. That's a bait and switch. That's a lie. That's not cool, actually.
Yeah, I hate that. That makes my blood boil.
It's really, really rude.
You listening? It's rude. Like,
they're bullying us.
My hard-earned money, gone.
Yeah. But there's also, like, there's such a funny situation in the vinyl world right now, because in 2022, vinyl outsold CDs for the first time since 1987.
Wow.
However, you know, you're saying press more, like, we'll buy it. But there's still a huge issue with pressing plants in general, because there just aren't enough. And the ones that do exist have really, really old technology that they're not even like making new parts for. Mm-hmm. So it's super hard to fix them if they break.
There's massive weights on these pressing things. I remember last year, someone said to me at work, oh no, there's a 9-month wait for us to get something in there to be pressed.
Yeah, I think that's the norm. And like, it takes a lot of planning around that. Like, I don't envy them having to plan a release around the fact that it's going to take 6 to 12 months to press something. But at the same time, if I bought it you need to fulfill it in a timely fashion. Like, it's also not my problem as a consumer.
This reminds me of another thing where it was, I was going to get it shipped to you. It was a signed Post Malone lithograph poster, whatever. And like, I kept emailing. I was like, it's gone past the date. When's this going to come? And in the end, they were like, yeah, this isn't going to happen. We're just going to send you one that's not signed. And I was like, cool.
Did they give you your money back at least?
I think they did. And then just sent, I can't remember, but I think they did. Otherwise, I would have been more pissed and remember it.
Yeah.
But again, it's like, surely there's been an agreement that these are going to be signed and you've sold them and you've kept the money for 8-9 months. Like, where's all the interest gone on that? It's not in my account.
I was going to say they owe you that money back plus interest because that's bullshit. I had the exact same thing happen with Ariana Grande. My sister's a huge fan of hers. It was the Sweetener era. They sold signed posters for like it was probably a reasonable price because it was in a bundle, mm-hmm. I bet, with the album. But I can't remember. I might be making that up. But Christmas came and went without this poster showing up. Actually, I think I probably ordered it for her birthday in mm-hmm. October. And then it like wasn't there for that, wasn't there for Christmas. Like, year went by. And I did eventually get it. But like, I think she'd already moved on to another album.
Yeah, like, that's mad.
It was like, it was so fucking stupid. And I have this like vision in my head of like some poor person with like a stack of like Ariana Grande posters running after her between shows. Like, Ariana, please sign these. We sold them.
That was so good. This is also like, I've seen a lot of people complaining that Taylor hasn't released any signed CDs or inserts for anything. She didn't do it for Midnight, did she? She did it for...
No, we have signed Midnight stuff.
Which ones didn't she do it for then? 1989. And it's just like, when do you think she would have time to do that while she's on tour?
Perhaps while she's jetting from South America to Kansas City Chiefs games. That might be a good time.
Listen, girl's got to get ready to see Daddy Kelsey. So, you know, I wouldn't be signing stuff either. I would be getting ready.
She doesn't have to, but just like don't. She's not selling them and then not signing them.
No, she's not at all. But I saw a lot of people online complaining about it. And I was like, she's performing for 3.5 hours a night. This was when she was in peak, like, Eras tour stuff. And it's like, babe, she needs a break. Like, I was fucking knackered just watching her. And she's performing. And she's doing her cardio workout, which, by the way, I've started my Couch to Eras tour. It's not going well.
Well, I applaud you for your efforts, but at the same time, that's a sales technique that she has employed in the past, selling signed ones. Maybe she just really doesn't have to do that because she's still mm-hmm. topping the charts with multiple albums at a time. And so that's just not necessary.
You know, some idiots out there would buy 5 different vinyl variants of it. So she doesn't really need to sell them signed. Yeah,
exactly. There's enough fucking stupid people like us out there. Buying multiple copies, so
we're... I am not ashamed at all. Speaking of idiots.
speaking of idiots, because another thing where I feel like I get duped a lot as a consumer is TikTok Shop.
Dupe.
And a little bit Etsy. I mean, right now it's a lot of TikTok Shop, but like,
yeah.
If there's a TikTok Shop, man, that's hard to say.
TikTok Shop?
And they are filming themselves in their basement / workshop, like with their own embroidery machine, you know. But I'm like, there's you know, Jenny in her Pennsylvania basement, you know, cranking out mm-hmm. these sweatshirts. And like, I would rather my money support her and her dreams than Universal Music Group and Bravado's, because they don't even put in the effort to make a cool design or ship it out on time. So like, why don't I give Jenny my money instead?
It's true. And a lot of those designs are way better. It's like we said before, like, we don't want, well, I'm going to use Taylor as another example, but like, Harry's just as bad. Like, we don't want Harry Styles' face just slapped on a t-shirt.
Olivia Rodrigo too. Like, I really wanted her merch because I love her music so much, but I'm like, I cannot wear a teenager's face on my chest. I'm a 33-year-old woman.
No, you can't do that.
No.
I think
thrown in jail. Straight to jail.
Straight to jail. But yeah, like there's so many good designs that I've seen on Etsy. Like we want stuff that's more subtle so people can, you walk past yes. someone and you're like, oh, you're a Harry fan too. Like I've even done that when I was walking through the underground one day and I saw someone had a Harry bag and it had something like that. And I was like, oh my God, I love your Harry Styles bag. And she was like, oh my God, thank you. Like it's more of a connection with fans within the fandom that you can then like, you know, just speak to and bond over something.
Yeah, because like some rando off the street really wouldn't make the connection.
Yes.
So like, you know, this person's a real fan because they picked up on that lyric or whatever, yeah. that subtle inside fandom joke or whatever's mm-hmm. on your sweatshirt. Yeah.
I love that. But I guess, you know, it's really hard to do stuff like that nowadays because we've tried, haven't we? We've tried to come up with some really cute designs and sell them on Etsy. But like, there's just so much legal rigmarole that you then have to jump through.
Yes. It's a little scary because you're going up against artists who have quite a strong legal team that you might not be able to compete with. And it's a very kind of weird gray area because like Taylor in particular has a lot of her stuff copyrighted. You know, like with Harry, we noticed when we were putting things up, like if you just used his name in the listing,
yep.
it would get flagged. Even if like, treat people with kindness is kind of as stupid of a saying as yes. haters gonna hate, players gonna play. Like you can't really trademark something so stupid.
Yep.
Like it's such a basic, you know, phrase. And so we would make treat people with kindness merch and sell it on Etsy as our little side hustle. And it worked for a while. But they, you know, like every time you would put Harry Styles anywhere in the listing, just as copy, not even on the physical product, it was going to get found and it was going to get flagged. And I did want to read the takedown notice that you get when somebody like Harry Styles demands that you remove your listing from Etsy. Etsy sends you an email that's a little bit scary. And it says...
A little bit scary.
Etsy received a report of trademark infringement from Harry Styles, alleging that certain content in your Etsy shop infringes on their intellectual property. When a complaining party submits a report of alleged infringement that complies with our policies, we are required to remove the content cited in the report in accordance with our intellectual property policy. And so then they go and they deactivate your listing. Mm-hmm. Nobody ever looks at it. Like, this is definitely all automated. And it's just because a representative of Harry Styles, in this case, it was merch traffic at infringementreports.com.
Wow, love them.
Like, they flagged it. And, like, I've had people, like, I've made non-artist merch designs, too, like, on yeah. Etsy. And, like, somebody random will be like, it looks like mine. And they flag it. And Etsy just takes it down. And, like, you have to fight to prove that you didn't infringe on anybody's copyright. But, like, it's a huge process. And, like... The other side, getting somebody else's thing taken down is much easier than defending that yours has a right to be back up.
Yeah.
It's just, it's tough. And the thing with Etsy is that the competition is really high because of drop shipping, where you can make a design and every time somebody orders the design, it's printed on demand by a third party. And you honestly, you have no involvement. You're not Jenny in her basement printing it or using your embroidery machine.
And I feel like post-pandemic, there's been such a rise in like people thinking that they can just create designs, sell stuff on there, and that is like another source of income for them, which great if you can hit the nail on the head, get your listings at the top, get reviews, do all of that. But as you said, there's so much competition on there that, you know, you could put 20 listings on there and not get a single buyer, not a single purchase.
Yeah, I think like I was reading a recent article on a site called The Hustle, and it was titled "The Etsy Sellers Paying Rent with Taylor Swift Merch. Long lines in high demand for Swift's Eras Tour gear have opened a market for creative fans." And like, they do find a few who have been able to like make a decent living or at least supplement their living by doing this. But like, obviously those are the ones that make the article. The hundreds, if not thousands of ones who don't see that kind of success don't make it into the article.
Yeah.
You know, because I think in the beginning when we made those treat people with kindness sweatshirts that were kind of like a knockoff of the really expensive ones that Harry was selling. And like this, like even when I say it, like obviously it sounds really shady, but like we made, I think we sold like $10,000 worth of sweatshirts. That wasn't our profit, but that's how many we sold before everybody else was doing the exact same thing. Like we got in on it quickly. and were able to kind of undercut his prices. But then people undercut our prices and we weren't selling any anymore. And then I think eventually we got a cease and desist notice and couldn't do it anymore anyways.
And that's the moral of the story, kids.
Yeah. So in that article, there's a New York City-based photographer named Holly Turner. It says she, quote, has been making 4 to 6 sales a day of Swift-inspired hats, sweatshirts, t-shirts, candles, and more, enough to cover her monthly rent.
Wow.
And she says Taylor Swift has had a reputation for having... Good play on words there.
Holly
Turner. Taylor Swift has had a reputation for having really good merch up until the Reputation album.
There will be no explanation. There will just be reputation.
And she's a super fan. She runs a Tumblr account devoted to fair price tour tickets. She once received $3,000 as a gesture of support from Swift herself at the start of the pandemic, is what this article says. She goes on to say, since that Reputation album, this is what we were saying, it's felt like just the same photo slapped on a bunch of times. I saw a pretty big hole in the market. And then they have an attorney come in and speak who says making fan merch is legally precarious. She says there are 3 elements of law that come into play. Copyright infringement, which could include use of an artist's album covers, lyrics, or imagery. Right to publicity, which includes an artist's right to their own name, image, and likeness. And trademark enforcement, which may include anything the artist has sought to trademark for themselves. Which we were talking about Taylor having trademarked a lot of things. This says she has over 200 trademark registrations, including the word Swiftie.
Wow.
So that's a little tough. And then she was making a lot of headlines in 2015 when 1989 was originally released because she trademarked This Sick Beat, Cause We Never Go Out of Style, but like lyrics, you know, from the album. And then she started going after Etsy sellers with cease and desist letters, just like the one that we received from Harry. But this, I think she was kind of one of the first artists to do it in a big way, like a lot of Etsy sellers were getting these notices, and it reflected kind of poorly on her, I think, because, and that's like when I was looking at old articles, that kind of seemed to be like the general public consensus is that like, you're a multimillionaire. She's now a billionaire. Like you have enough money. Let your little fans sell a few t-shirts. Like it just looks icky to stop them. Like, I just really don't think Jenny and her embroidery in the basement is just cutting into Taylor Swift's merch sales that much that they need to stop her. But at the same time, like the people who are maybe using AI to come up with hundreds of designs and uploading them all to Etsy and circumventing these cease and desist orders just on pure volume alone, you know, maybe we could take them down. I don't know how you would differentiate them easily, but...
I don't know either, but there must be a way, someone with some jiggery pokery, but like there's always going to be a market for the official merchandise. You know, a lot of the time fans are making this merch because they're passionate about it. They want to do something as a hobby. They want to be more involved in a fandom or for whatever reason. And I agree with you. I just think like, let people do it. If people thought it was shit and they didn't want to buy it, they wouldn't spend their hard-earned money on it. They would buy the official merch.
Yeah, I just hate seeing, like, especially when I was seeing all these fans get these refunds, and I'm like, oh my God, you spent so much money on a collection of ornaments or whatever, like, that are so wildly overpriced and underdesigned. Like, ah.
It's like £25 for one Christmas ornament.
Yeah, I just, it pains me to see it, and it just reinforces that they can just feed us shit and we'll lap it up. That sounds really gross, but that is what it is.
Well, on that note, if you love to be fed shit, just continue buying it.
And just continue listening to this podcast.
Because we will feed you with shit a couple of times a month.
We sure will. Well, I just think that, as we kind of touched on in the first episode, fans' power is in their own pockets. Don't give your money to something that isn't worth your money. Like, it doesn't make you a better fan, and... you know, you're not like gonna look cool because you have all these shitty t-shirts that somebody didn't care enough to design well for you and then overcharged you for. In fact, I think that's the antithesis of looking cool. And I'm an idiot who owns the blue sweatshirt from the Eras Tour. So I'm also talking about myself. I am not immune.
I'm so fucking jealous.
I am not immune to this, but your power is where you put your money. And, you know, if fans are making good merch, support them. Like, I know it is a legal gray area, but you really won't get in trouble as a consumer.
Yeah.
So.
Wow, Jackie, you could almost run for president. That was really inspiring.
Yeah. You'll find me on the ballot, actually, next year. I'm going to announce that in episode 3.
On that note, that was season 2, episode 2 of Fandemonium. If there's anything you want us to touch on or talk about, then just send us a message. See you next week.
See you next time.